Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 814. It's the 29th of June, 2017. On the podcast today, I have Brian McMaster, chairman of Jangada Mines. Ticker there is JAN. It's their first day of dealings, and Brian talks about developing the largest and most advanced stage PGM project in South America, which they bought about 2 years ago from Anglo American. Also on the podcast, Dennis Thomas, CEO of Phoenix Global Mining, PGM ticker. And it's also their first day of dealings, and Dennis talks about their copper project at the previously producing Empire Mine in Idaho. Plus, Chris Bailey, founder of FinancialOrbit.com, covers Green King, Smiths, and Purple Bricks. Plus, Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communications on Andlas Energy and Power, Redstone Connect, and Coates Group. Plus, as always, I have the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs on the platform today.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Brian McMaster, chairman of Jangada Mines, J-A-N. Brian, thanks for coming on.
Thank you, Justin. Good to be here.
Yeah, now I know a lot of people probably know you from Harvest Minerals. You've got another thing going on here. So tell us, first of all, congratulations on your listing today. But before we get into a bit more detail, Brian, tell us about Jangada Mines. What's it all about?
Jangada Mines is South America's largest and most developed PGM metal group asset.
Wow, that's already a claim to fame. That's quite impressive. And so, what are the reasons behind your intention to list here?
The reason was to bring it to the market to progress the asset through to development. The reason why the asset is so advanced is because we picked it up a few years ago in the bottom of the cycle. It had been through a lot of exploration over a period of 40 or 50 years, and more recently, Anglo American Platinum had owned the asset for about 12 years, and our estimates are that predecessor firms had spent in excess of $35 million. A truckload of work has been done on the asset, over 30,000 metres of drilling, advanced studies of all descriptions, mining licences are in place, etc. So we really have managed to get something that's right on the cusp of production.
Yeah, when you said on the cusp, in timeline-wise, you know, how long is on the cusp? What do you mean by that? How far away is that?
Well, our plans, you know, the listing was today, which was obviously a major milestone for the company, but the plans over the coming several months are that we will expect to be making some announcements around upgrading the resource over the next few weeks, and then by about 2 or 3 months from now, we should have a scoping study out, quickly followed before the end of the year by a pre-feasibility study, which will lead us into a trial mining phase very early next year, which will take, you know, 3 or 4 months. And assuming all of that goes according to plan, we'll be in a position to commence plans for building a 30,000 ounce per annum facility.
Wow, okay. And so far then, what do you know about the resource there, Brian?
Well, we know pretty much everything, really, to be honest. I mean, the work that's been done today has been extensive, and I don't say that lightly. I mean, it has been to the analysts who have been down there, the brokers we've taken down there, and others who have been looking at this through the IPO process. We've all been shocked by just how much work and how much good quality work has been done. So we know at the moment we have a JORC resource of 1 million ounces of 2 PGM plus gold, at a grade of 1.3 grams per ton. We know we have substantial credits for chrome, nickel, copper, rhodium, vanadium, titanium. All of those things, you know, are not not fully costed into the models, and we need to do that over the coming weeks and start to update the market about the value of that extra basket.
Yeah, yeah. And what did you say then that the figure, the average production per year is going to be, hopefully?
Well, the initial sort of starting point, the first plant that we plan to build will be 30,000 ounces per annum, which is quite substantial. And based on the known JORC that we have at the moment, that's a mine life of over 20 years.
Yeah.
We've got a further 11 deposits which have been drilled and tested and have proven positive for PGMs, which are not even included in our JORC yet. So the opportunity to expand the mine life into the future is substantial.
Yeah, and as far as the metal market is concerned at the moment, what's your thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, the number one thing about this is, you know, there's a lot of talk about platinum and palladium and all of this sort of stuff, but the overarching issue and people need to remember is the platinum and palladium markets are in supply deficit. 80% of all the known platinum in the world comes from South Africa, from very deep, very expensive underground mines. We are not in South Africa, which is a very important consideration first and foremost, and secondly, we'll be an open cast mine, so we don't have the same cost burdens that those other mines have.
Yeah. So where are you located exactly?
We're in the northeast of Brazil, about 280 kilometres by a paved highway from the capital of Sierra State, which is known as Fortaleza. And Fortaleza is a city of 3 million people. It has a dedicated ore handling facility. So we really are in a luxurious place compared to a lot of these other mines elsewhere in the world.
Yeah, and obviously, of course, I suppose by now you know Brazil quite well, don't you?
I wouldn't say like the back of my hand. It's a pretty big place. But, yeah, we've got a very established network down there. We know how to navigate around the country quite efficiently, and it really is a great place to do business.
Yeah. And so who have you got on the team there with you, Brian?
Well, as part of, you know, an indication of the significance of the asset, we bought the asset a couple of years ago from Anglo, and earlier this year when the IPO was taking shape, we managed to lure away the guy who was Anglo's man on the ground. So we now have the asset and the guy. So we've got the licenses, all the data, all the core, and the guy who put it all together.
Excellent stuff. Okay. All right. So if anyone's looking at you, you're listening today, that's obviously a major milestone in your journey here. So what's next? What can we, as you did mention it earlier on, but just to reiterate, what's next in the next 3 to 6 months and a bit further down the line?
Yeah, we've got a pretty strong pipeline of news flow coming out in the next few months. As I say, there'll be some resource upgrades, there'll be a scoping study and a PFS all due out before Christmas. So that's quite a large basket of news to come through.
Yeah. And finally, how much did you raise, Brian, around about approximately?
Well, we went out looking for two. We closed the book when the orders got to four, and we accepted 2.25. So there was a heavy load of demand. Everybody got scaled back heavily, which I think was a reflection of people's perceptions of the quality of the asset. And hopefully that translates into some strong, support in the market to come.
Yeah, excellent stuff. Okay, probably. You've been on the podcast several times, and you know I like to do this. So for anyone obviously not following, and I assume there's quite a lot of people because you just floated today, so it's hard for people to follow you before that. But for anyone listening and liking the sound of this project but not following, could you give them three reasons why they should hit that follow button, please?
Well, the three main reasons I think are that, it is a very rare story. It's one of the few PGM development stories outside of South Africa, and anybody who follows precious metals will know the importance of that story. Mm-hmm. The second main reason is, as I said, we're heavily oversubscribed. We've got a lot of great guys joining the register today, and I think that should translate into some strong support in the market coming forward, and that would certainly be worth following to observe. And, the third main reason, I think, is, if you do have an interest in the precious metal space, this really is a very cheap entry to an asset that is soon to be in development, which will see a re-rating of the stock.
Excellent stuff. That's Brian McMaster. Thanks, Brian, for chairman of Jan Garden Mines. So JAN is ticker. Brian, thank you very much for that, and hopefully we'll chat again soon.
Thank you, Justin. Look forward to it.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Dennis Thomas, CEO of Phoenix Global Mining, and the ticker there is PGM. Dennis, thanks for joining me.
My pleasure, Justin.
Now, I'm assuming quite a few people, investors who look around the AIM market, may not have heard of you. And that's because today is your first day of trading on AIM. So congratulations for that. But first, Dennis, explain, what is PGM all about then for people listening
right
now?
Thank you. Thank you. PGM Phoenix, we were set up specifically to look, scour the world for base metal projects and opportunities. And we kissed a lot of frogs in the process and finally settled on the to redevelop the Empire Mine in Idaho, which I'd known previously. Basically, Phoenix set up by a group of technical, commercial and financial people, well experienced in the world's mining, initially self-funded by the principals. And Empire Mine ticked all the boxes as far as we were concerned. It had historical production 1901 to 1942, very high grade copper, gold and silver, in an excellent jurisdiction, and had an oxide deposit which has had considerable work done on it since the 1960s, 287 holes in, shallow holes down to 100 metres. So we know a great deal about that, and the plan is to bring an open pit into production in 2020. At the same time, underlying the oxide resource is, we believe, a considerable sulfide resource. And concurrent to us doing a pre-feasibility study, we will be examining the underlying sulfide potential, which is a very exciting proposition. And that basically is what we're about, Justin.
Yeah, and so how much have you raised today?
In terms of the pre-IPO funding, which was excellent, we were looking for 250,000 in the pre-IPO. We in fact raised 850,000, greater than 850,000 in our pre-IPO, which enabled us to then get started, in fact, on the PFS, and also enabled us to upgrade the ore resources from a historical resource to a modern JORC compliant resource. And now, in fact, we were going to raise at IPO 4.5 million. We've in fact reached 4.6 million. So that gives us an excellent start to our program.
Yeah. So just go through it again. So it's previously been mined at the turn of the century, and then some further exploration in the 60s, is it, or what happened there? So what made you decide that this you say you scoured around and looked for different projects, and what was it that made this project stand out to you?
I think that the mine closed its full production in 1942 when a lot of the young miners got conscripted for the Second World War, mm-hmm. and it had a few scratchings after then. In 1960s, it was then recognised that copper treatment technology by heat leaching, basically using acid leaching and then using solvent extraction, would work. So people started looking at the surface ore body. And as I said earlier, 287 holes have been drilled into it by probably 10 or so companies that have gone in, junior companies, looking at the resource. So it's a brownfield site, a lot of historical data. We actually have all of the core and everything in the core shed in the little town of Mackay. But it also ticked other boxes particularly, and especially its jurisdiction and the fact that Idaho is very much pro-mining and the local people are so much on our side. It really was a no-brainer in terms of near production brownfield site that we could bring into production pretty quickly, and the grades are fine, and particularly the underground potential. That in fact the last shipments for the mine were tungsten shipments, which gives us an exciting possibility that the system is zoned and going into what we call a tungsten skarn, and it would hopefully we're going to find exciting tungsten grades down there. So this could end up being a copper tungsten mine in its life.
Yeah. Okay. And so, as far as significant milestones going forward here, so what's happening? What's going to happen in the next few months?
We're going back in now to we've had a modern JORC compliant resource generated for us by SRK Consultants, mm-hmm. and they, in fact, because of the historical data that we have, modern JORC compliance means that some of the old data can't be included in that. So we're, in fact, going back and resampling and redrilling various parts of the potential open pit with a view to adding to the resources quite considerably. and we have an exploration target of between 3.5 and 6.7 million tons actually within the pit area that we're hoping to upgrade and bring into our resource. We're also then opening the underground operation and getting into the ore body itself. The old, there's 11.7 miles of underground tunnel that we're hoping to access, and if we can get in there, we'll start sampling and maybe drilling the sulfides. So it's a lot of potential news flow.
Yeah. So when do you expect to complete the pre-feasibility study?
Pre-feasibility study, we're looking to finish quarter one 2018, next year. We'll then embark on a bankable feasibility study, which we'll do complete quarter one 2019, and then we'll go for production early 2020, and that'll be a simple drill, blast, and crush, heap leach, and then solvent extraction with a view to producing 7,000 tonnes per annum of cathode copper.
Okay, and as far as yourself, though, so where have you come from to be undertaking this project today, then, Dennis?
Do you mean personally, my background?
Yeah, your background, your track record, yeah, in this area, yeah.
I'm a mining engineer. I have been evaluating and, sourcing mining projects really back from 1984, looking at many, many projects all over the world and working. Setting up teams and putting people in all over the world to set up operations. And I've been, as I said, my great passion has been really project generation and getting projects working. So that is my background. And the team that we have put mines into production. Roger Turner, my co-director, we formed the company together. Roger's experience with Richard, our CFO, putting Oxus together. We're really mine builders, and that's what we want to do. We're production men. We're not just out to explore. Our objective is to put the Empire Mine into production.
Yeah. And what do you see as far as the copper market is concerned? I mean, it's looking quite good at the moment. The copper price is slowly rising back towards the former highs it hit a few months back. So, how do you see? What's your take on the copper market there?
I'm excited for the copper market, particularly. I mean, the two metals that people are talking about now, lithium and copper. I mean, the green revolution is here. Electric cars are a massively exciting development, and I think I'm already quoted as saying every time I see a wind turbine, I rub my hands and think there's a few more tons of copper going into those. So I think that the move towards greener energy and particularly electric cars is massive as far as the copper industry is concerned. And copper, I seriously believe copper will go into deficit in terms of production and demand in the very near future. I think the 2020s is going to be very exciting for copper miners particularly.
Yeah, excellent stuff. Okay, one last thing, Dennis. On the Daily Podcast, I do highlight the top five most followed companies. And if someone's listening right now and they like the field you're in and your experience and everything you've talked about, but are not yet following you, which is, I assume, quite a few people as yet because you've just listed, give them three reasons why they should hit that follow button, please, Dennis.
I think, well, primarily, it's a great project. I think that it's a great project with potential. It's in a low risk environment, supportive, very supportive jurisdiction, with superb exploration potential within the ore body. Number two, we're a very experienced management team, blend of technical, commercial, and financial. With global international exposure, we know what we're doing. We want to build mines. It's as simple as that. And I think we're going to have great news flow. I think we have the potential with as we develop the story through this summer and to PFS. I think we will be developing a very steady and exciting news flow.
Excellent stuff, Dennis. Good to chat to you. And like I said, you've got news flow happening soon. So hopefully we'll speak again in the not too distant future. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Chris Bailey, founder of financialorbit.com. How are you, Chris? You all right?
Hello, Justin. Yeah, very well, thanks. Very well.
Yeah, I'm just thinking, do you know what? I'm sitting in my office, quite cold. I'm thinking, this time last week, I've got jeans on, and I've got a hoodie top on. In fact, it's branded up with Vox on it. But this time last week, I was too hot in shorts and a T-shirt, you know? It's ridiculous our weather, isn't it?
Thank goodness. Then I'm sure there's many listeners thinking, "Thank goodness this isn't a webcast." But there you go.
But they wish it were. I bet many people wish it were now after describing my attire over the variety I display in my office here.
I'm definitely sticking with they wouldn't, Justin. But you know, there you go. I'm sure you have various correspondents who will agree or disagree with that statement.
Yeah, no, I think audio is the best option, definitely. Yeah.
I think that's definitely right. Yeah.
Okay. What are we looking at this week, Chris?
Well, you know, despite the changeable weather and everything, still some interesting stuff happening in markets. Thought we'd start off with a sort of DS Smith, a company which sort of, the name doesn't give away what they do, but actually a big player in packaging and related paper, corrugated, cardboard and related. A company whose shares are now actually at an all-time high this morning. They've just announced a new deal. They're going to buy a company in the States, a packaging company in the States. And basically, as far as I can figure out, despite having to place 7% odd of their shares in order to help fund this acquisition, they're doing absolutely the right thing. Because the story of packaging is actually a global one. And as we all get these highfalutin things off Amazon and other providers off the internet, obviously the requirements for packaging are changing, generally going up. And so that's a global theme. And frankly, DS Smith have worked out how to play that in Europe. And according to some of their stats, the opportunities in the States are just as compelling. The second aspect, of course, is that all of these fast-moving consumer good companies that are trying to hawk their products in supermarkets and the like, that they need a packaging to stand out because, you know, we've got a plethora of choice. Packaging is one way you can help differentiate your product. And obviously what companies like DS Smith are finding is that their customers are not just wanting to sell their products in the UK or Europe, they wanted to do it often with very similar type of packaging all around the world. So I think it makes a lot of sense. The numbers they got, their underlying numbers today, were absolutely fine. Dividend up 19% was probably the highlight, the earnings per share going up as well. But I have to say, a money raising to fund a sensible looking acquisition has a tick in my box. The city has voted yes as well. And despite the burst up, as I say, to new share price highs, one to be looking at, I would suggest.
Yeah, and you can see there's two previous highs of resistance there, but about 4.56 and that, and it just exploded past that today, now 4.73. So it may settle back a little bit, but there's a new range there. So you would assume it's going to break to higher levels if it cools down. The RSI there. Go on.
Absolutely. Yeah, I was going to say, the old resistance becomes the new support. And sure, you've got the technical aspects of the placing and related, no doubt, to filter through over time as well. But I think you're right, Justin, that sort of 450-odd pence level, the old resistance may become the new support. So either way, packaging is not just for Christmas or to be ripping off your presents or whatever. Maybe it's to be investing in as well.
Exactly. Okay, cool. What else, Chris? What else do you think?
A bit of Green King. I mean, it sounded good. Record results, market outperformance, integration. Obviously, they bought the Spirit Pubs chain, completed a year ahead of schedule. That all sounds tick in the box. So probably people are wondering why the shares are kind of dullish on this. And of course, it's because despite most of the metrics moving in the right direction in terms of profits, like share, dividend, etc., you know, they have said one or two quiet words about the UK consumer being a bit uncertain. And I have to say, looking through the numbers, I think they've done a grand job in terms of their integration. I think tick in the box on that behalf. The trouble is that they're kind of pushing a bit water a bit uphill, or not probably flavoured water, shall we say, beverage water in their case, uphill, given the range of brands. But I think Green King's an all right company, actually, and any further weakness, I think, is more opportunity than threat on their share. So, yeah, they do look. That you look at the share price chart, it looks downright dull. But you can see the fact that they have previously this year bottomed in the sort of the 650s, 660s, and obviously we're sort of not too far off that now. a buy on sufficient weakness, I would say.
Yeah, okay, cool. Yeah, it is odd, I suppose. Let me just look at the chart. Have they rallied of late or not? Is this one of those things that the travel is, the journey is better than the sort of the arrival? Because, No, not really. Yeah. They've gone down. They have.
I think, as I say, the Spirit acquisition, I think, was sensible and has been seriously well executed. But, you know, I think it was a bit bonkers when it was pushing up towards 10 quid a share. Do you remember when pubs were very much in because lots of chat about the value of property and all of that other malarkey, which obviously we know is always the top of the market. But, you know, in the 680s or 650s, 660s, you know, a little bit around where we are now, the shares, if you go back over time, you know, are back to where they were in sort of early 2013, with the exception of a few months trading earlier this year. I think this is all right. And in the wider scheme of things, is one to be looking at on a quiet day, I'd say.
Yeah, it's not a crazy PE, is it? But 10 or 11, so it's fine.
No, you know? It's fine. I mean, we all know the issues with the UK consumer, etc. That's all well known. I would say this is a persisting brand, and as I say, the integration of the Spirit business has given them another leg. So my feeling would be, if there's a generalised concern about the UK consumer, and I think, to be honest, that's highly factored in at the moment, this is to be one in those sort of mid-600s on a quiet day when nobody wants it, to be picking up a few quietly in. Maybe it requires a bit of on-the-ground research. You know, not that I'm suggesting anything by that, but I'm sure there'll be many listeners who might partake in a quiet visit just to check out the finer points of their various establishments.
Marvellous. Okay, and anything else here, Chris?
Final thing is Purple Bricks, obviously annoying TV advertising notwithstanding. What looks like further progress today, they themselves are expanding into the States as well, into California, among other markets. But yeah, seemingly good progress. You know, some amazing stats in terms of their corporate performance. The one I liked best was their website visits increased to over 2.5 million last month. And a sale has been agreed in the UK every 9 minutes, which is pretty phenomenal stuff. Online, obviously, is their main bag now. 72% market share of their business comes from online now. So everything looks great. Revenues up and everything else. Of course, they've still got funny profits. I mean, it's adjusted EBITDA in terms of their profitability, which tells you all you need to know. My other observation would be that even when you try to look at it through kind of in funny ways on profitability, it's still trading at gargantuan multiples. I think it's about over 500 times earnings for 2019, which does seem quite excitable. Look, I mean, if you believe that they're going to be ultimately over time, the UK's number one estate agent, and they've got something here in terms of cutting out traditional ways to sell houses, then maybe there is something here. But I have to say, I'm going to leave this one up to the experts. The shares might be up 4% today, might be kicking around, not too far off the all-time high. But as we've already previously discussed, give me packaging and maybe pubs ahead of property and estate agents.
Yeah, absolutely. Perp. Okay, cool. And yes, unbelievable. The PE is crazy.
Yeah, but it was. I mean, but you have to say, you know, kudos to anybody who bought the stock at the turn of the year. 100p in December last year, 416 pence today. Who said you can't make a fortune in the markets? Don't own a share of it and never have. But for those who did or have or do, well done.
Excellent. Chris, thanks for that. And speak next week, fella.
Sounds the plan, Justin. See you soon.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communications. You all right, Al?
I'm good, Jess. How are you?
Yeah, I'm all right. We did have a tweet in the week saying, when we get an update from Alan on Andlas? So I don't want to disappoint them, Al. I'm not sure if it was tongue-in-cheek, the Twitter thing there, because it seems sometimes when there's lack of communication from the company, you know, you keep that communication going. That line of communication, you keep it going, you know?
I keep it going. I keep going. Yeah, well, I think, of course, we're not going to be hearing anything, and we haven't heard anything for the past few weeks because, of course, we've got the Ramadan and Eid celebrations in the region, which effectively are it's like Christmas over here. You know, people work for a couple of weeks in the run up to it, and then everything shuts down, and that's basically where they're at. But everyone returns to work on Monday. But of course, we're waiting for the formal permission from the Indonesian government to push ahead with the wellhead IPPs, the wellhead power projects, which Andalas have joint ventures with the state petroleum company Pertamina. And of course, Andalas raised money recently at 0.1p. The directors took part in the placing too, so and that's at a premium to where we are now at about 0.8p, I think. So, but a piece of news that sort of caught my eye the other week. The company Agrico acquired an Indonesia-based power rental company for nearly $33 million. Which is yet another indicator that some of the bigger players in the market see potential in the Indonesian region, and obviously recognise the massive power shortages there that need resolving. So that was an interesting point. But as I say, going back to Andalas itself, we've had the Eid and Ramadan celebrations. Nothing's happened at all for the past couple of weeks, but they all go back to work on Monday, so hopefully we can start to see things move next week.
Marvellous. Okay, well, so there we are. For the person on Twitter who wanted to request that, there we are. Request
service. Hopefully that's
delivered. Signed, sealed, delivered there on ADL. Alright, what are you, else are you looking at, Al?
Okay, I went to the UK Investor Show, and I was chatting there with a gentleman called Mark Braund, who's the CEO of Redstone Connect. REDS is the epic code. Now, this is the former Comms PLC. The company changed its name to Redstone Connect earlier in the year. This company basically builds network infrastructures and creates smart buildings where they go and design, build, and install desktops, data centers with their Connect IB solution. They create smart car parking facilities, wayfinding direction tools, and everything else that links into the digital network within the area. So far this year, the company raised $6.5 million in a placing, acquired a company called Anders & Kern, and it's landed a couple of plum contracts, one with the centre in Milton Keynes for smart car parking, the Pep Shopping Centre in Munich. But yesterday, I was very impressed to see that they'd landed the contract with Tottenham Hotspur to supply IT cabling and systems to the new stadium. Why is that of interest to me? Well, firstly, as a Spurs fan, I obviously have an obvious bias there, but I can hear all the Arsenal fans booing out there as I speak. But secondly, I visited the new Spurs stadium, which is under construction early this year, and it is a massively impressive project. We had a tour around and went to the new virtual reality centre, where if you buy your seats, they put your virtual reality goggles on and you can see what your seat looks like, where you are. You can walk through the restaurant and see all of the facilities on offer before it's even built. Very impressive indeed. So it's a prestigious contract because firstly, Daniel Levy and co, who run Tottenham Hotspur, are widely renowned as very astute financial operators, and winning a contract for anyone winning a contract with Spurs, that's no mean achievement. So I think for little Redstone Connect to win this contract is a benchmark event for them, I believe, and obviously they can then use that facility to highlight what they've the offering and build on there. In terms of performance, the company's currently worth just under £28 million. It's been as high as 180 pence this year, as low as £1.15. Currently trading about 135p. But this company is clearly going places. It's made several acquisitions. It's just won a what's very much a benchmark contract, and I think the future is looking very bright. And clearly, with smart buildings, network infrastructures, there's a massive demand for this now. And Redstone are one of the companies right at the forefront of that particular growth industry.
Marvellous. So Redstone Connect there, I won't look at the chart, but at the moment the chart system I use is having a problem with data issues. I don't know why that is, but there we are.
Well, it's on the chart. We dipped down to the we saw a couple of higher lows at the end of last year, and we just tested at around the 125 P mark and recovered from that. So the stock is looking in recovery mode and is about to cross a significant moving average. So if we can push above this, then I see no reason why the stock can't make it back to at least 160p in the next 2 to 3 months.
Marvellous, Al. And anything else you're looking at, Tala?
Yes, indeed. This is a company we spoke about earlier in the year. It was first flagged up on January 18th by Dr. David Paul at VectorVest. It's the former Guinness Peat Group. It's called Coates Group now. COA is the epicode. And this company, again, going back to the theme of that we've talked on previously, just about companies that manufacture small things which may not be the world's most engaging products, but nevertheless are essential and great cash generators. And this company supplies yarns, it supplies craft industries, thread, zip yarn, embroidery, and a whole range of brands. And this is supplied worldwide across six continents. Coates so far this year, in terms of trading, they've group sales rose 5% over the for the period this year from January 1st to April 30th. The company said it had been a strong start to the year, and as a result, expected to deliver 2017 results ahead of previous guidance, which obviously is a great thing. One of the overhangs on the stock had been a settlement on the group's pension liability, which has now been reached, and off the back of that, the company's just recently entered the FTSE 250. But I think what really stands out about this stock is that when we first spoke about this, the company was trading at 76. It was trading at 53 pence, we had a target in January of around 78p. The company hit that target. Currently trading around 76p, and the VectorVest metrics on the back of the results and the increased numbers that have been published upgraded the projected targets to around 113 pence. And given where the company is on a fundamental level, given where the company is on a technical level, it shows every sign of pushing ahead and achieving those targets before the year's out. It's backed by solid fundamentals and solid technicals.
Yeah, well, look at that. It's a chart there. It's a momentum chart there. And, it's almost a pullback. So it doesn't really pull back to, you know, it's a 50-day moving average. It does test now and again. Yeah. I'd say no way to that, which is about 70 pence at the moment, the 50-day moving average, just below that, 69 pence. So maybe wait for a test of that. And there we are. Obviously, if you've done your research beforehand, this is, this podcast.
Do your research beforehand. Yeah. But again, to go back to my initial point, the companies we've discussed in the past, like Carcolo last week and Trifast, these are all companies that are manufacturing. They're big cash generators, and they're solid if unspectacular companies. But this is another such company. It's supplying the crafts industry. It's got a diverse range of products, all of which sell for relatively small amounts of money. But the volume the company supplies is huge. And it's a very solid business to invest into. You probably won't see a spectacular return, but if you've gone in at 53p this year, you'd be sitting quite nicely now, and with every sign that the share is going to push on and hit a pound maybe before the end of the year, and hopefully our target of £1.13.
Marvellous. Yes. Thanks, Al. Like I said, anything you hear here is just information, not investment advice. And thanks,
not advice.
Al. Yeah, exactly.
Bring it to your attention so you can help you make informed decisions, I think is the term, isn't it?
Yeah. Cool. Cheers, Al. Speak next week.
Thanks, Josh. Speak next week. Cheers.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five, London Capital Group, LCG. At four, Lions Gold. That's Lion Ticker. At three, Asia Met Resources. That's ARS. At two, UK Oil and Gas, UCOG. And number one, most followed company on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, I had Jim Williams, CEO, on the podcast yesterday, Ariane Silver, AGQ. Plus, here are the top five most liked RNSs on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five, Sirius Minerals, SXX ticker, quarterly update for Q2 2017. At four, London Capital Group, final results. Having said that, I think they're down at the moment, LCG. So on those they did start up. Let me just check. They did start up this morning. I think they're now down 16%. At three, Metal Tiger, MTR, Holdings and Company, late yesterday afternoon, that was. At two, Sirius Petroleum, SRSP, final results. And number one most liked RNS on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours was from Westminster Group. That was the AGM statement, which suggested that that MOU, Memorandum of Understanding, with Middle Eastern Airport, which is worth £35 million a year to them. Now, their market cap is only about £18 million, so that plus existing revenue doubles. It's double their market cap. They suggested that they were very close to finalising that, and some of the board members were flying out to the Middle East to hopefully finalise that contract. So it seems very close. And that's a truly transformational deal for them. And that's it for the podcast. Thanks very much for listening. Muchos apreciado.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
The Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.